we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
You buy insurance from a friendly agent, but when you need it, who's looking out for you? I'm Dr. Marilyn Singleton, and welcome to America Out Loud Pulse on the America Out Loud Radio Network. When I was in law school, the first elective I signed up for was insurance law. Unfortunately for the future lawyers of America, this enlightening class had very few students. I always remember that the teacher began with a joke. It's kind of an inside insurer's joke. Farmers paid a claim. The class reinforced my feeling that the insurance industry was indeed, as economist Andrew Tobias called it, the invisible bankers. The insurance industry is built on the fact that life is uncertain and insurance will soften the blow of life's unexpected events. The insurance market in the United States is one of the largest in the world. In 2022, insurance premiums were $1.48 trillion. We've got to remember that insurers are not really in the business to take care of us. They're in the business of making money. Making money is fine. I'm a capitalist, but insurers shouldn't pretend otherwise or hoodwink their customers. They have actuarial tables that project when you will die, whether you'll get in an accident, depending on the kind of car you have, and on and on. The industry is in the business of calculating risks to maximize profits. In healthcare, artificial intelligence is the new bad boy in town. There's a recent class action suit against United Healthcare, America's largest insurer. The lawsuit said that United used artificial intelligence to wrongfully deny coverage under Medicare Advantage healthcare policies. Their algorithm determined the amount of rehab to which a beneficiary is entitled after an injury or a stroke. The AI program consistently overrode the physician's recommendations, but the case managers at the insurers faced termination if they veered more than 1% from the AI determination. The insurer continued to use the algorithm, knowing that only 0.2% of rejected patients would file an appeal. Nothing related to denial of medical services shocks me anymore. According to a Stat newspaper investigation, a United Health official said in a company podcast, if people go to a nursing home, how do we get them out as soon as possible? Now, you could look at that as, oh, they're hoping for a speedy recovery for the poor elderly person, or they were hoping for an early death or just kick them out to save money. Your guess is as good as mine. My guest tonight will discuss the insurance industry and ways to make sure that all Americans have access to quality medical care. Wendell Potter has had a long career in corporate public relations, and he served as press secretary to a Tennessee gubernatorial candidate, head of advertising and PR for a large integrated healthcare system in East Tennessee, and was a partner in an Atlanta public relations firm and a state and federal lobbyist, so he knows how to turn a phrase. He was an investigative journalist whose articles and commentaries have appeared in many publications, including the New York Times, and has appeared frequently as a guest on ABC, all the stations, Fox, MSNBC, and PBS. He's the author of the award-winning book, Deadly Spin, An Insurance Company Insider Speaks Out on How Corporate PR is Killing Healthcare and Deceiving Americans. Welcome to the show, Wendell Potter.
Thank you, Dr. Singleton. It's good to be on the show.
Well, we'll just start at the top. Tell us your journey through this maze of insurance corruption. And I love how you put it, that you were a corporate propagandist. So what gives?
That's right. My official title at Cigna, where I was employed, it was my last big employer in the insurance business. I worked for Humana before that, but my title was Vice President of Corporate Communications. But in reality, if we had been truthful, it had been Vice President and Chief Propagandist, because what I was doing was spinning constantly. I was trying to embellish the company's image or the industry's image, trying to make bad stories go away. And try to bamboozle reporters and the public and to mislead them about how health insurance really works in this country. I did that for 20 years. And I ultimately came to realize what I was doing was the exact opposite of what I tried to do as a reporter. As you mentioned, I was a journalist in my first career. And I walked away from that job after a crisis of conscience. I saw a few things that happened kind of in sequence a few years ago that just made it impossible for me to stay in that job. I just again I saw too much of how companies are slaves to Wall Street investors and Wall Street financial analysts, but also how so many Americans are unable to get the care that they need, including people who have health insurance, but they, in many cases, can't use it because the deductibles are so high.
Well, I tell you, this whole idea of having insurance, more and more people are realizing sometimes all it is a card, all it is a number, but when the chips are down, it doesn't do squat,
It's true.
which I
It's
hate
very
to
true.
say.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. When my mother retired, she had the option of taking the health insurance from the company she retired from, or having Medicare and getting a cash payout. And I told her, take the real insurance. Medicare doesn't pay for anything. And after her first visit to a doctor, after she had this insurance, she just said, oh my goodness, I'm so glad I took the real insurance and not Medicare. And we'll get into some of the stuff about Medicare and Medicare Advantage, which more and more people are signing up for and being sorely disappointed. In
Yeah.
your book, you talk about a couple of cases that you had to spin about a family who was insured through Cigna and were relying on it. Can you tell us what happened and what the battle was to try to get this case taken care of?
Yeah, it was a really ultimately a very tragic case. It involved a young girl, 17-year-old girl in Los Angeles, who needed a liver transplant. And they were, as you noted, insured under, or they thought they were insured adequately by a Cigna plan through this girl's father's employer. And it covered transplants. But what they realized when they arrived at the hospital in the morning, the surgery was to be scheduled. And keep in mind, a liver had been found to transplant into Nataline Sarkisian. That was Nataline's name. But just before the surgery was to start, one of the doctors took Mrs. Sarkisian aside and said, "I'm sorry, we can't go forward because we haven't gotten clearance from Cigna." I got to know the family quite well in years later, and Mrs. Sarkisian told me, she said, "Well, what do you mean clearance?" She didn't know anything about something that is very prevalent in health insurance called prior authorization. And it's gotten even worse in the years since then. And it's a practice in which an insurance company bureaucrat, often many miles away from where a patient lives, can refuse to cover something that is a covered benefit, refuse to pay for it by claiming that it's not medically necessary or medically appropriate for the patient. And that's what happened in this case. The family was obviously distressed, very concerned. They decided they'd try to shame Cigna, and they were really quite successful. They got the media very much involved in in this case. I got so many calls from reporters all over the country and then ultimately all over the world because of Cigna's refusal to pay for this transplant for a 17-year-old girl whose doctors felt confident she would be she'd recover and live for many years. But anyhow, the bad publicity became so great that within a few days, I talked to the CEO and others in the company, and the executive leadership said, well, let's reverse that denial. Let's cover the transplant. Let's not say we're doing it in a way that sets precedent, but let's go ahead and cover it. And I thought, okay, this is great. Nataline will get the surgery that she needs, the transplant that she needs. Sadly, though, so many days had passed since the original transplant was scheduled that she got sicker and some of her other organs began to shut down. And she died just 5 days before Christmas. And I'd handled so many cases similar to that, not quite that bad, that extreme throughout my career. And I just couldn't do it again. I could not be a spokesman for an industry that allows that to happen and still does day in and day out.
Well, I tell you, every doctor has had their trials with these insurance company, and I mean kind of personal trials, not legal trials, that sometimes spending all day on the phone, and sometimes it's the doctor, him or herself, because you're trying to get to a fellow physician and not somebody who's just stamping these things. And now that AI has come out, you don't even know if it's a human being who's saying, don't do this procedure.
Exactly.
And it takes up so much time away from patient care. And sometimes I wonder, you know, I think patients, they might not believe you when you say, well, I can't do this. You know, your insurance isn't going to pay for it. And you want to put them on the phone and say, listen to these bozos. They don't get it. They just don't get it.
You know, I think you're right. I think, and you probably raise a good point. I'm sure patients are very confused. Sometimes they think it's the doctor's fault. People don't understand health insurance because it is very complicated, very confusing. People don't know, like I said, that insurance companies engage in this practice all the time. And this does take up a lot of valuable time, physicians and physician staff. And it contributes to the high cost of healthcare and health insurance in this country. We spend about a third of all that we spend on healthcare. It's about a total of $4.5 trillion altogether. And about a third of that goes to administrative costs and overhead that is just unknown in other countries because of the way that we have structured this. All doctors' offices and hospitals have to have large staffs, people who do nothing more day in and day out, but try to get approval for a procedure or a medication for a patient, or to make sure the doctor or the hospital is getting paid right. It's just outrageous how much money we waste in this country on administrative stuff like that that does nothing to contribute to patient well-being.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I was reading about this new law that is supposed to improve the prior authorization process. It's supposed to speed it up. And gee whiz, for an urgent request, it's 72 hours. Right. To me, in what universe is urgent 3 days?
No kidding.
But one of the things they said, and you reminded me of this, talking about administrative costs, is that in order to do this and speed up the prior authorizations, is the government would have to hire more people. Because, of course, it's congressional law, so it can only apply to government programs. But so they'd have to hire more people in order to sit there and sift through these requests. And, of course, I'm kind of a medical libertarian. It's like, well, don't have prior authorizations at all. And you've just got to trust that doctors are using their best medical judgment when... You know, people say, oh, you're doing that test to make money. Well, guess what? Nobody wants to put a patient through a useless test. There's a handful of people. There's always people like that. But you can't judge the whole profession for a few bad apples.
You're right. I think you're exactly right. I'm with you. I think that prior authorization, it was supposed to save money and save people from getting unnecessary care. But to your point, I'm certain that we probably spend a lot more on that process than we would if it didn't exist and there was over-treatment, because it's just an enormous amount of money that is spent every year. And like you said, even when you're trying to reduce it or improve it, the government has to create, has to have create other jobs to police this. It is just an outrage.
Well, I tell you, it's insurance is one of those necessary evils, and obviously we have to pay for our medical care somehow. And I personally, I'm a big fan of cash for minor stuff, and then having insurance for the big stuff, because you'd have to be a gazillionaire in order to pay for a hospital visit. I mean, sometimes some hospitals it's $5,000 a day, and nobody can have that much in their savings. So when we come back, I'd like to talk to you because you know so much about this, is this sort of really incestuous relationship between all the insurers and all the consolidation that's happened in insurers and what their profits are like and what that means for us. And again, I'm a capitalist. I'm for people making money, but not off the backs of vulnerable people. So we'll get into some of the money business of insurance after the break. I'd like to thank everybody for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. As you know, we are always a beat ahead. Right now, I'd like to remind you about one of my favorite medications, Cofix RX. This was a nasal spray invented during COVID, and it's made of iodine, xylitol, both of which kill viruses. Nothing kills 100%, but these catch them in the nose before they have a chance to get all the way down your respiratory tract and make you sick. And I've been using it since COVID came out, and I feel like it's helped me. I like to use it when after I go to a big box store or something where I'm around people I don't know and give myself a couple squirts up the nose when I get home. It's A lot of doctors and pharmacists recommend it. And one thing I love about it was invented in the USA and it's manufactured in the USA. So, what could be better than that? We've got a Cofix button on our page. Just click it on, read more about it, see if it's right for you. I like it, and hopefully, you will too.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
In 2008, people could spend an average of 12 seconds on a task without becoming distracted. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds. The digital age is narrowing our attention span. trouble concentrating or recalling information is frustrating, embarrassing, and kills productivity. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created Focus and Recall to boost your brain power. And unlike other supplements that don't work, Focus and Recall is not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients to help you immediately sharpen focus, concentrate longer, and strengthen recall. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top, shoot it down. Thousands of five-star reviews proves it works. Supercharge your brain and see the difference. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
We've been talking with Wendell Potter, an insurance insider, about the whole health insurance business. And one of the things that seems to be happening, I mean, right under my eyes, I've been in the business for many moons, and the insurers seem to all be consolidating. I remember when there were tons of insurance products out there and all sorts of companies offered insurance. What is happening now in the insurance business?
You know, you're right. When I first started working in healthcare, there were a lot of health insurance companies operating in every state. Most of them at that time were operating on a nonprofit basis. And then big life insurance companies figured out a way to make some money on health insurance. And we now are seeing that our health insurance system in this country is dominated by a handful of very, very large for-profit insurance companies that have consolidated the marketplace over the years. When I was at Cigna, I managed the communications around several mergers and acquisitions that the company did. Cigna has done that. So has Aetna and United and Humana, Anthem, which is now called Elevance. All of these companies have grown tremendously by gobbling up smaller competitors. More recently, though, and that, by the way, is called horizontal integration. More recently, they've been getting into the delivery of healthcare and buying what's referred to as pharmacy benefit managers, which is a big middleman in the pharmacy supply chain that is sucking so much money out of people's pockets and going straight into these insurance companies. They also are buying up physician practices and clinics. So insurance companies, that's not even an appropriate name for them anymore. You mentioned earlier, they're really banks or financial services companies that have different products, but at the end of the day, they're financial products, and they, in many cases, are not hardly worth buying.
Well, this is what the sad part is that people think they have one thing and then they have another. One thing I'll tell you that really scares me, knowing how the insurance companies seem to enjoy denying services, is I understand United Health is buying up home health and hospice. And I think to myself, me of a certain age, that I'll need home health or hospice. Are they going to have the mentality, let's bump them off right away so we can save money?
You know, I think that's a good point. All of us, regardless of our age, ultimately will undoubtedly need home care or expensive care and hospice care. And if insurance companies buy these as they are, I'm concerned for all of us. They make a profit on these acquisitions. That means that we have to pay even more for insurance and even more for healthcare. And another thing that they've done is saddle us with high out-of-pocket cost. We have to pay a lot of money out of our own pockets in most cases these days before our insurance will even kick in. And most Americans don't have as much money as these insurance companies demand. In many cases, you can be on the hook for up to $20,000 in a family policy out of pocket. If you get sick, you have to meet that deductible or those out of pockets before your insurance will kick in. That's why a growing number of Americans with insurance are filing for bankruptcy. And it's why 100 million Americans now have medical debt, often crushing medical debt. And the majority of those folks have health insurance. Health insurance is not what it used to be. Insurance companies, and I know this from the years I was in the industry, not only do they raise premiums every year, but they diminish the value of your health insurance plan one way or another every single year. And that's been going on for decades now.
Well, what's interesting to me, people thought the Affordable Care Act was going to be some sort of panacea. And they say, well, they have these subsidies. And to me, it just compounds the problem. We got into this terrible downward spiral because a third party was involved in payments. So patients didn't see how much things really cost. And there wasn't any difference between cost and value. And so the insurance companies, they're raising the premiums and they say, oh, well, the ACA subsidies are increased, but the premiums are still high. It's who's paying for it might be a little different, but the high cost is still there. And nothing has really been done to reduce the absolute cost of delivering services.
Yeah, you make some good points. The Affordable Care Act, what it did do was expand coverage to make more people eligible for health insurance so they could afford it. But even a lot of those plans have high deductibles. It did do some good in that it made some of the practices of insurance companies unlawful, which I think has been a really important thing. Before that law was passed, and it was when I was in the industry, insurance companies could refuse to sell you coverage at any price because you'd had a pre-existing condition, because you'd been sick before, because you had recently gotten a cancer diagnosis or had a heart attack or something. They declared those folks uninsurable. They turned down about one of every three applicants. And that would be the case today if it hadn't been for that provision of the law. And it also made it unlawful for insurance companies to drop people when they got sick. And that was something that was prevalent in the industry as well. You can't trust those guys. So I think there is a need for an appropriate level of regulation. But your point earlier, the cost of healthcare has gone up and up. And I think a big reason for the increase in healthcare has been the involvement of private insurance companies. They keep raising rates every year. They're not very good at controlling healthcare costs, as we've seen. There's no shortage of evidence that they have been lousy at that. So we have an almost intractable situation in which we have premiums going up every year and healthcare costs going up every year.
And so we're left in a position, what do we do about all this? And what is the answer? There's certain folks who believe single payer is the answer. Some believe, as I'm a proponent of, as I said, cash base for small things, have insurance for the big things. And of course, health savings accounts, tax-free accounts, and these accounts could be given to your heirs, that not something that just goes away every year. There seem to be mechanisms out there to actually sit down, look at costs, and this whole thing that they've done with the price transparency, that was supposed to be, oh, wow, we're giving transparent prices. But as you know, these hospital prices aren't really transparent. They're kind of fake, made-up prices.
That's true. The list price of healthcare has very little meaning. And that goes for drug prices as well as to stay in the hospital or a procedure. It's just almost meaningless. That I'm actually at a conference as we're talking. It's called the U-Power Conference, and people who are here are people like me in most cases who had worked in health insurance or healthcare, but got sickened by what they saw. And so they're trying to see what they can do from the private sector to improve access to care and the quality of care and to reduce the cost of care. I'm very encouraged by what I'm seeing here and in other forums like it that I've attended and spoken at over the past several years. I think that as more employers and people understand that they don't have to buy health insurance from one of these big giant companies like United or Cigna, there are alternatives that are actually better and cheaper and can assure your access to high quality care. That's something that is currently possible, but not enough people know about it. So that's one of the things that I want to do. I have a newsletter called Healthcare Uncovered. And as we go forward, I'll be highlighting some of these folks and the work that they do and how they have been able to save employers and individuals and families a lot of money. And I'm sure save a lot of lives too. I think there probably, as I said earlier, an appropriate role for regulation. One thing I learned in my career is that unless you put some rules in place for these big insurance companies, they will behave very, very badly. They will resort to their bad ways of refusing to sell coverage to people because they've been sick in the past. So I frankly am a bit encouraged from what I'm seeing in the private sector.
Well, that is so good to hear, because I think what you say, that it's like the insurance company is sinking to the lowest level, given half a chance, you know, which is too bad. But I suppose at the top, they're thinking, well, we're not in the business of morality. I don't know. But I've seen it all too many times, these denials that they know are wrong, but they know people aren't going to appeal. And this, I remember my husband had an elbow, you could probably call it tennis elbow, and we had Kaiser at the time, and they were going to charge for doing something about it. And they said it was a pre-existing condition, so it didn't fit into the program that we had. Well, I said, that's hokum. And we went to their own website, and they had this little ask a nurse or whatever type thing section. So he went to the ask a nurse, went to the FAQs, typed in tennis elbow, excuse me, and their own definition said that it was a condition that comes and goes, and it completely exonerated their description of the condition that they said in the denial letter, right in their own website. So that was an easy one. And most people don't have a doctor in the family to prod them to push it and say, come on, this isn't pre-existing. There was a patient I had once where by mistake, he was sent to the ICU. So it was on his record that he went to the ICU, but it was a mistake. He was immediately taken out. And the insurance company said, oh, something must be wrong with you. You went to the ICU post-op. So it's finding any excuse.
Yeah, it's true. It has become increasingly that way. And people need to understand this. They, like we said before, like you said, people think they have coverage that's going to be there for them when they need it. But all too often, that's not the case. And sadly, people find out when it's too late that it's not the case. So I appreciate all you're doing. And I remain hopeful that we'll eventually find some answers to get out of this mess.
Well, this meeting where folks are discussing these newer ideas, what are some of the things people have thrown out there? And I think it's really important for people to have a forum where they can just throw out ideas and not have somebody say, well, that's a stupid idea, because nothing's stupid when you're trying to solve a big problem.
Right. You know, one of the things that a lot of these people advocate and are involved in is cutting out the insurance companies to direct contract or contract directly with hospitals and physician practices. They advocate for direct primary care. And similarly, what you've talked about, In many cases, it's kind of a cash basis, but you can structure a plan that provides people direct access to primary care in particular, again, circumventing the insurance company. And that's really, I think, has a lot of promise because, as we've talked before or earlier, so much money is wasted because of the involvement of insurance companies. And if you can cut them out of the picture, as many employers are beginning to realize they can do, they can save a boatload of money and save their employees money as well.
Well, the direct primary care movement is really shooting up. It really kind of started to where a lot of people were getting into it, maybe as far back as 2002. And every year, more and more doctors are getting into this model. And yeah, this is a subscription service, basically. And you pay X amount of dollars a month, depending on your age, not your illness, and depending on how many people are in the family. And you have complete access to your primary care doctor. And more doctors are getting into it, like endocrinologists, because diabetics, you kind of don't really need to see the primary care doctor. You can just go straight to the endocrinologist or a neurologist, people who have a chronic problem. And it's working very well for the patient as well as the physician. I'd like to talk to you after the break about a couple of things that have been in the news, Medicare Advantage, and as they're calling it, Medicare Disadvantage, and private equity buying up all these practices, and what you think that's going to be doing to healthcare. So we'll get into that after the break. I'd like to thank everyone for listening to America Out Loud Pulse on America Out Loud Talk Radio. You know, we've got our free apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa. You can hear Pulse every weekday at 5 p.m. Eastern with an encore at 10 p.m. and on iHeartRadio at 8 a.m. the next morning. You can also listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. I love it that all shows go direct to podcast in 24 hours. The episodes are on lots of podcast networks, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Stitcher, and iHeart. So make it easy. Bookmark americaoutloud.news/pulse. Just to let you know our lineup, I'm on Mondays, Dr. Marilyn Singleton. Tuesdays, we've got Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley. Wednesday, Dr. Peter McCulloch. Thursday, Dr. Peter Bregan and Ginger Ross Bregan. And Fridays with epidemiologist Dr. Harvey Reich. And if that's not enough for you, we've got Nurses Out Loud Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern. Lots of medicine, lots of politics. Sometimes more than the other, but always interesting.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutloud.news, a place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Clean, pure, with premium ingredients. Global Healing's pure plant protein offers 20 grams of protein per scoop, and it's a perfect way to maintain and build lean muscle while indulging yourself. It combines enzymes and probiotics to maximize nutrient absorption, improving digestion and your gut health. Available in vanilla and chocolate flavors, elevate your protein consumption while supporting your overall wellness with pure plant protein. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Before the break, I've asked Mr. Wendell Potter to comment on what's going on with Medicare disadvantage, what's the story with these HMOs and what they were supposed to do and what's really happening, and private equity. So we'll start with Medicare Advantage and HMOs. What are your thoughts?
You know, Medicare Advantage plans seem to be a good deal. They've been around for a long time. In fact, when I joined Humana in 1989, Humana had a Medicare business. Back then, it was called Medicare Plus Choice. But not a whole lot of companies were participating in that program. So during the early days, or in 2003, Congress passed legislation called the Medicare Modernization Act of 2003. And it created what we now know as the Medicare Advantage program. And the hope and the expectation would be that if private insurance companies were involved in Medicare, that cost would go down. But sadly, that's been proven wrong year after year after year. It never has saved any money. In fact, it is costing taxpayers a ton more than traditional Medicare. These companies have been overpaid between $80 and $140 billion a year because of the ability of insurance companies to rig certain aspects of the Medicare Advantage program. It's really a scandal. Finally, some lawmakers are beginning to wake up, both Republicans and Democrats, to the profiteering of insurance companies in this program. But what people don't know when they sign up for these plans, when they see these advertisements on TV, they see people like Joe Namath talking about Medicare Advantage and the additional benefits that people can get if they sign up for it. But people don't realize those additional benefits are often usually very paltry. And they never mention, these ads never mention, that you're going to be subject to prior authorization, which is largely unknown in the traditional Medicare program. People don't know that they may not have access to the doctor or hospital of their choice. And they may not know that they could be on the hook for thousands of dollars if they intentionally or inadvertently go out of network to get the care that they need. Or even if they travel out of their home area, they could be on the hook for a lot of money. So it is a program that I think is more aptly should be named Medicare Disadvantage. So thanks for mentioning that. It is a program that by no means is an advantage for most people who sign up for them. The advantage is for the big insurance companies. It has been a huge cash cow for big insurance companies like United, like Humana, like Anthem, and like, you know, Blue Cross plans. These for-profit companies control that business to a large extent, and they are profiteering on seniors and taxpayers. The traditional Medicare program is not ideal either. It has an antiquated system that requires 80-20 insurance. It requires 20% co-insurance for a hospital stay, for example. And a lot of people can't afford to use that insurance, that, you know, public insurance, unless they buy a supplemental plan, as I have done. And that's I would encourage anyone who can afford it to go that route, to buy a supplemental policy to cover your out-of-pocket cost. But we have a very big problem with Medicare. It's costing taxpayers far more than is necessary. And that's one of the big areas of focus of my work and the nonprofits that I lead. And we try to expose a lot of that corruption in the newsletter that I publish, Healthcare Uncovered.
Well, speaking of your nonprofits, I'd like the people to know about, there was one that you were very interested in called Remote Area Medical. What is that all about?
Yeah, that's a nonprofit organization that really played a key role in changing the course of my life and my career. It's an organization that was started back in the 80s to fly American doctors to remote villages around the world in third world countries. But soon, communities in the U.S. caught wind of what they were doing, asked them to start holding what they refer to as expeditions in their home, in their areas. These expeditions are really kind of pop-up medical clinics, and sometimes they're held at county fairgrounds. I went to one when I was still at Cigna, and I had never heard of the organization before, but it shouldn't have to exist. But when I went there, I saw people who were lined up. And this was a county fair ground, by the way, in Southwest Virginia. People were lined up by the hundreds waiting to get care that I saw was being delivered in barns and animal stalls. And it just broke my heart. And I realized that the work that I was doing as a chief propagandist for the health insurance industry, that I had some responsibility for what I was seeing. And I made a commitment that day to leave my job. I couldn't, in good conscience, keep doing something that I knew was contributing to people having to seek care in barns and animal stalls in this country.
Well, you'll be glad to know that it's moved from animal stalls to an RV outside the dollar store. So that concept has been adopted. And certainly in rural areas that really do suffer from lack of care, somebody's gotten the message. You've got to go to the people because they can't get to the big town to get to the doctor.
Yeah, and they don't have the money, even if they did have the transportation to get to the doctor or the hospital. They just simply can't afford health insurance or their out-of-pocket costs. A lot of those people who go to those pop-up clinics have health insurance, but they can't use it. Like I said before, they are saddled with these high deductible plans that they just don't have the money to cover.
Yes, indeed. Now, you also are involved, and I guess from what I understand, started the Center for Health and Democracy. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I started that to as an advocacy arm of my work. The newsletter is our journalism arm, Healthcare Uncovered. The Center for Health and Democracy is an organization that we do some lobbying on Capitol Hill and around the country. We advocate for meaningful reforms that can improve the lives of Americans, reduce healthcare costs. The word democracy is in there, sort of like what you alluded to earlier. A lot of politicians, sadly, are kind of in the pockets of big insurance companies and other healthcare entities. And we've got to do something about that because it is an assault on our democracy, our republic. So we have a big problem with money in politics, and that has really contributed to the dysfunctionality of our healthcare system. These big companies like Cigna and United spend so much money on campaign contributions and lobbying that the little guy just has no chance.
Well, I tell you, and this is the pharmaceutical companies are giving a lot of money, and we in medicine have started to notice that when somebody's asking you, what's the right answer to do for X disease? Somehow it's never a lifestyle change anymore. It's a drug. And, you know, we all know, and it's interesting because there's sort of a cognitive dissonance. You see all these articles about lifestyle changes, you know, beyond just stopping smoking, but eating right, getting enough exercise, and exercise is the new pill for everything. You'll read an article about that, but then you look on television, there is a drug for everything. And yeah, the people taking the drug are frolicking around, they're happy as clams. And this is not good for us. And it's another thing that increased costs.
It is. And as you were saying, there absolutely is something to be said for personal responsibility, for people to understand that they need to take care of their bodies, themselves, through self-care, through doing things, not just quitting smoking, as you noted, but eat better, exercise more, and just avoid things that are poisoning our bodies and making us unhealthy and leading us into chronic conditions that are very costly and ultimately very deadly.
Indeed. And I think people are kind of starting to catch on that obesity has become our new chronic condition, and sitting around, lack of exercise, and it's starting in childhood with the kids playing computer games rather than being outside playing. And it's very sad. Now, you are a busy beaver. Another organization that you are forming and having pulled together is the Business Leaders for Healthcare Transformation. And so you're really trying to put some of these ideas on paper. What if you could wave that magic wand, what would you have for your ideal healthcare system? I have to say, I have to hit myself for saying system, because I kind of hate that idea, because I think of medical care, it's between doctor and patient, and having a system is kind of what got us into trouble in the first place. But go on.
that's true. I think even the word system is not really appropriate for what we currently have. But I think employers have a very, very big, very big and important role to play. They need to wake up and realize that they are part of the problem as well, too, or have been, and they need to be a part of the solution, because so many of us get our health insurance through our employer. So that's why I started that organization. And also, frankly, one of the reasons why I'm at this conference, and I do a lot of speaking with employer groups around the country. If I were to have a magic wand, I would really think that it would be encourage people like who are attending this conference to raise the awareness of their existence, to make people aware that that certainly their health insurance is not as viable as they thought it was, and very, very expensive, but they don't really have to go that route. They can not having to work with these big companies. So I'm a big proponent of change that can occur in the private sector, and also with appropriate regulations that doesn't allow these big corporations to maintain the status quo.
Well, I know that some businesses are starting to have on-site clinics or clinics nearby, and I think it's a wonderful idea to make medical care accessible for the employee. My husband, before he retired, had a business and he supplied healthcare. They completely paid for it. And one of his employees still went to the ER. He wanted to strangle him. It was kind of like, I'm buying this health insurance for you, but you're not using it because you've become lazy. And he decided it was quicker to go to the ER than to make a doctor appointment. So you were right. We've got to educate people.
We do. We do indeed.
Now, would you like to see our government in charge of healthcare completely, like a full single-payer system?
I don't think that's really something that's likely to happen, to be honest with you. I don't know of any time in American history in which Congress has kind of uprooted an entire industry. I do think there is a role for appropriate regulation. I will be honest with you, I do think a single-payer system would be better than what we currently have now, because it's such a mess. But I do think that it's a means to getting to an improved healthcare system. But like I also have said, I'm very encouraged at what I'm seeing happening in the private sector. And I think that what we need, I'm going to use this term, uniquely American healthcare system, one that has appropriate regulations in place at both the federal and state levels, and an appropriate role for employers, possibly, and to make access easier for people and to lower cost and improving the quality of care. That's possible. We just have the need to have the political will, and employers, like I said, need to wake up and realize that they have a big role to play here too.
Well, that sounds good to me. Now, how can people get your newsletter, read what you have to say? Is there a website, or how do they sign up?
Yeah, you can go to, it's called Healthcare Uncovered. It's published on what's referred to as the Substack platform. So go to wendellpotter.substack.com and you'll find the newsletter. You can sign up for free. It's growing very rapidly. And we have a good list of subscribers. Some people pay for it. That helps us cover our cost and pay for some of the journalism. But we're unique. We're really watchdogs over the health insurance industry and over healthcare broadly and the profiteering and a platform to showcase what's happening, like I said, in the private sector that's promising.
Well, I thank you so much for coming on the show, and there's so much more we could talk about, and I do hope that you'll come back again.
I would like that. Thank you, Dr. Singleton. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Well, thank you. And I'd like to thank everyone for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. As you know, we are always a beat ahead. I urge you to look at our new trending cloud on our revamped website. It's just great. It makes it easy to find things of interest. We've got the email section still, and that's doing very well. You can just email your question and we'll get an answer for you. And we've got AmericaOutloud.shop. And what that has is the books that are written by our guests. And if you put in Out Loud as a code, you can get a discount. And there's many other products on there. So check it out, AmericaOutloud.shop. And like I always like to say, whether you agree with what you've heard or have other opinions, please share the show. And until next week, say it loud. I'm free. And I'm proud.